In this case, you pay cash, you got no monthly payment, which would have been about $420 on a 9% loan for 5 years. You can now save that $420. And at the end of 5 years, you will have the $25,000 cash sitting there, plus a $10,000 or $12,000 trade-in value. So you can literally level up in 5 years from that $20,000 car to a $35,000 car and not have any payments. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Welcome back. This is our 10th episode of the Service and Wealth podcast. That may not seem like a lot, but I'm told that this is already more episodes than the average podcast ever creates. And so I wanted to thank the handful of you out there who are subscribing and downloading every week. I can track that. I can't track those who, you know, might just stream it online and aren't actually subscribed or downloading, but I know that there's a handful of you out there who are consistent listeners, and I really appreciate that. And you know, that's sort of like the test audience. You know, you guys are the beta testers here, because we've taken the last couple months off from any sort of real big social media or marketing push, just to try to work on content and building up this library. Because you know, to be honest, if the way we kind of did it was a little bit like the old adage, the cart before the horse, or the one that I heard all the time from older officers and retired officers in the Marine Corps, is getting out in front of your skis. So take it whichever one makes sense to you, but basically it was a little bit strange that we didn't have any podcasts to listen to or any blog posts to read. But to have done some sort of like aggressive social media marketing campaign to try to like gain followers when there's nothing really to listen to, it didn't seem like it made a lot of sense. So here we are 10 weeks into the podcast. It's going to be not quite close to 10 hours worth of listening, especially if you listen faster than 1x, but you know, that's at least one full week of listening material for your commute to and from work. And we've got over a dozen blog posts at this point, so we're starting to get there. Once the course comes out, the course will be about 3 or 4 hours, a self-paced course that has worksheets and downloadables, including a budget tool that you'll be able to download. And so at that point, we'll get back into the marketing. In the meantime, you know, if you do listen, you do follow. When you listen to something that makes sense and either an episode from the podcast or one of our blog posts that really taught you something that you are able to either find useful, or maybe you're even already using it within your budget and your personal finances, you just text the link or message the link to as many of your friends as you can. Because once again, the whole mission here from the Military Wealth Coach is to demystify budgeting and savings and military pay and benefits, and just give some really clear strategies, you know, some basic tips on how to not mess it up, and some really clear strategies that can be implemented in your life. There's no reason that you wouldn't or that you couldn't, because these are all strategies that my family and I have used over the past not quite a decade. You know, I guess really we started in earnest about 6 or 7 years ago putting these strategies into work, and it took about 5 years for to hit our first like 7-figure target. And we started with basically nothing. You know, we had more debt than we had equity. We really only had our paychecks, and you know, now we've got multiple income streams and debt's rapidly dwindling. And that's good debt. Like, you know, that's mortgage debt. We're debt free from consumer debt or credit card debt or any of that you know, really dangerous, bad short-term debt. And we've got, you know, a really nice portfolio of assets, and it's all from the things that we teach here in this course. And, you know, there's a lot you can do, and there's a lot that makes big steps in gaining wealth, in building a portfolio and growing your income and getting you to the point that your military paycheck is, you know, maybe half or part, some fraction of what you earn. And then there are other things. And so those are sort of like the things you can do positively. And then there's other things you can do that take you the other direction. And probably the biggest and most common and most damaging financial decision that every young person in the military makes is to finance a car. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, the timing is inspired not by anything crazy. You know, I have plenty of stories of young Marines, you know, E2s, E3s coming back from a deployment, and the first day after, you know, we get back and everybody says hello and turns their weapons in the armory and gets like a beer out of the cooler, and then goes home for like a 4-day weekend, and then comes back. And I've seen plenty of them who came back on that Monday or Tuesday with a brand new $30,000-$40,000 car. Didn't matter how much you saved on deployment. You didn't save enough to buy that cash. Like, that was definitely a financed. And we had a real awesome secret weapon, which is a staff sergeant. That's an E6 in the Marine Corps. He was about as big as a house and had a voice that was as booming as a cannon on a tank. And every time one of those kids showed up with a brand new car that we knew that they had financed way beyond their budget, the staff sergeant would just jump in the car with them, make them drive back to the dealership, and lo and behold, the dealership took those cars back, every last one of them, right? So you can have a secret weapon. Corey, if you ever hear this, you know who you are. Mad respect and much love to you. And if you don't have a Corey secret weapon, then the best technique or the best tactic is to not finance that car in the first place. And so this is also, you know, this is a lifelong type thing. When I was home visiting my parents who are, they're up there, right? we're having the same conversation, right? And if you grow up seeing, you kind of follow the marketing of the American dream, even Hollywood backs it up with Ford versus Ferrari and all these car-based shows and Fast and the Furious, and you're like, oh my God, I gotta have it. Like, you can't afford it, but you want it. And you don't want it because you actually want it as a person. Like, you weren't born and, you know, the first conscious thought you had when you were five was like, man, I can't wait to buy that like 2024 Ford Mustang or, you know, I don't even know. I don't pay attention anymore, right? But I used to. I used to lust after cars. And at one point, if you followed any of my other writings, you know, at one point I had two cars on payments, and those payments added up to almost $1,000 a month. But it seemed normal. It seemed like the thing to do. And it took making some really hard choices and really looking in the mirror and recognizing what the cost of that was, right? And why did I buy those cars? Why was I buying it? Well, I was getting it because I, you know, every time I turned on a football game or something like that, there was a commercial telling me that I needed that. Every time I went to work, there was somebody who had a big truck or a nice car in the parking lot making me jealous of them and wanting it. And then there were people I was trying to impress. And the nice thing, they were nice people. They were like, wow, hey, nice car. That's really cool. But they never, you know, actually want to talk about it or pay attention to me again. And over the years, I realized that, like, the best way I could put it is all those years I was driving in and out of the gate, in whether it was in North Carolina or California or anywhere else where I was stationed, and I had this truck or this car or this SUV that I was super proud of, and I spent all the money on to like tint it and upgrade the wheels and keep it clean and add a stereo system and like all that typical stuff. Like, everybody else was doing it, which meant what? Nobody else was paying attention to me, right? I wanted to show out, but nobody cared. And I think once you come to that realization, it really helps you get over the fact that, like, as much as you want to look the part, if nobody's watching, what's the point? And so eventually, you know, we started downgrading. My first step was to solve the cash flow was to just downgrade to a motorcycle. People were like, oh, hey, you got a motorcycle. Cool. Where's your car? And then, you know, nobody ever asked again. It was like, oh, that's what the major is driving. Okay, great. Let's move on. And everybody moves on. And then eventually you get to the point that you're like, you have enough cash and you buy the used car. And now you're driving to work in like a used Honda Accord or whatever. And you park next to your buddy who's got a brand new GMC Sierra Denali. And they're like, dude, I could fit your car in the bed of my truck. And that may well be true. But does it matter? What's the real cost of this? And if it's just for that one time in a parking lot that you brag about what you have, or you might look down on somebody else's car, is it really worth the financial cost? And I think that's really where the most conversations are started. But the reason why we started this conversation today the way I did is if you can never get over that sense of like tying your self-worth to like what other people think of you without realizing that they don't care, then there's nothing I could say financially that will get you to consider not financing a car, not buying a new car, buying a used car with cash. You'll just never see it, right? And so the first part when it comes to this car decision is you have to slow down. You have to ask yourself, what do you value? What's really important in your life? You know, if your car, you drive it on average, you know, the average person drives it, 45 minutes each way to work? You know, maybe an hour and a half in the car, 5 days a week. Another two hours, maybe on the weekend, maybe none at all. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, what's that, maybe 40 to 50 hours a week driving, or a month, I'm sorry, driving a car. And in 2024, the average car payment for a new car in America was $710. And the average payment on a used car in America in 2024 was $540. So we're literally talking about, you know, every hour that you're in a car it's costing you $10 on your payment, not to mention all of the other money that you're spending on gas and insurance and losing in depreciation. You know, that the average insurance, car insurance policy for like a 25-year-old, which is when you're in your 20s, you're paying the highest rates. And that's in 2024, that was about $200 a month for men and a little bit less, like $185 for women. But we're still talking. Now you got to figure that in. That's another $4 or $5 an hour. If you're driving 50 miles an hour and you're getting 25 miles per gallon and it costs you $4 a gallon for gas, that's another $8 an hour. Already you're spending over $22 an hour just to drive this car. And, you know, that's the equivalent of like the hourly wage of like an E5 or an O1, right? So you're literally losing for every hour you drive, you're like having to work at least 1 hour just to cover it. And that's not even counting depreciation, right? Which we'll get into a little bit later. So again, there's a lot of stuff you could do. There's a lot of stuff you might want to do. There's a lot of stuff you really should do. And the first step of that is to kind of push your ego aside and think about what really matters. Because while you're driving, you're not looking at that car. You're just sitting in and driving, getting from A to B, hopefully safely, hopefully with some relaxation, maybe a little education as you listen to a podcast. And nobody sees you. Like there's like that 30 seconds that you pull into the parking lot in the morning and like the 5 people out of the 100 you work with who see you pull into the parking lot, the rest of the day, nobody's looking. And it really is this kind of like, you know, sales copy and marketing fueled egoism that is like the whole American car culture. And at the end of the day, all we're doing is making corporations rich. You know, most people don't realize it, but a company like Ford or GM have financing divisions. And in 2023, you know, I think Ford made like $19 billion in profit just from the loans that they sell people who also bought their cars. So they're doubling their profits, right? They profit on the sale of the car and they're getting $19 billion more from the loans that you took out in order to buy the car because you couldn't afford it. Well, on the flip side, consider just if you buy a used car with cash and you have no payments. Well, as we just said, if we average used and new car payments together, we're talking about $650 a month. You know, and that's like over $8,000 a year. It's about $8,000 a year. So like you can buy an $8,000 used car, and then within 1 year, you'll be in a break-even cash situation compared to all those payments, not counting the down payment. So really, in a year, you'll already be ahead in your cash situation because you have no payments. And then in 3 or 4 or 5 years, well, you, instead of paying another, you know, $8,000 a year for the next 4 or 5 years on your auto loan, you'd be saving that up. And now when it's time, 5 years is up, right? And you're like, well, this car is 5 years old. I've finished paying the loan. It's time for me to trade it in and get a new one. And you take it to the dealer and they're like, we'll give you, you know, 7,500 credit. And you got no cash because you were spending it on payments the whole time, making that dealership and that Ford or GM financing corporation rich. Meanwhile, this person over here who buys cash, sure, they drove a, you know, a used Toyota Prius while you were driving a new GMC Acadia for the last 5 years. But at the end of that 5 years, you've got a car worth less than $10,000 and they've got $40,000 or $50,000 in cash. So guess what the next round's going to look like? They're going to show up in, you know, maybe a slightly more, slightly less used, you know, maybe like a BMW X3. You're going to go and lease another GMC Acadia and lay out another $700 a month, and they're going to save up. And maybe the next time you bump into each other at like a staff academy or a mid-level school for officers, and you know, now they're driving a car that's just as nice as yours, and they've got another $50,000, $60,000 cash, right? So the long game really is based on starting out paying cash, not having the payments, and we'll explain that why today. The final thing I want to say, just as far as like working on that mindset, is if you're a fan of the Bigger Pockets community, you know, Beardy Brandon Turner, is, he used to say, all you ever need is an $8,000 car, and then everything beyond that is ego, you know? So when I treated myself to a $10,000 car, or, you know, my wife bought a $10,000 car, I guess you could say we allowed ourselves a little bit of ego, right? We could have gone a little bit cheaper, but a little ego, but we didn't go over the top. And if somebody who's, you know, a multi-millionaire and has a portfolio of hundreds of real estate properties and lives in Hawaii with his family, doing whatever he wants, you know, and he's been doing that since, what, he's like 40, because of the decisions he made, including to avoid car payments and pay cash and buy cheaply and buy used. If it's good enough for that, it's got to be good enough for all of us. All right, so let's jump into it. The first thing that I want to talk about, well, we've already been swimming in it, right? We're not just jumping in right now, but once you get the mindset fixed and you stop worrying about ego and what other people think about, and you realize like this car's got to be safe and reliable and relatively comfortable, but not perfect. Not everybody needs, you know, an AMG. That should be a reward, and you can afford an AMG cash by the time you retire after 20 years in the military if you have avoided car payments. That's for darn sure, because you'll have saved well north of $200,000 in cash in payments that you would have been making. But once you get past that, the first step is really to realize how buying a new car hurts you. And it's really in three different ways. And the first way is this thing that you don't really even see, and it's called depreciation. This is different from depreciation that the IRS cares about or that real estate investors care about. This is, you don't get any benefits really from depreciation. It's just the amount that your vehicle's value goes down each year. Now, in real estate, if you have rental real estate, it's depreciation is something you can deduct from your taxes, which means it's actually kind of a benefit to you. The same can be true with vehicles if you use it for a business purpose. So as we go into this, always keep in the back of your mind that if you purchase a vehicle or you lease a vehicle and then you use it to drive to work, but then you also use it to drive for Uber or to drive for DoorDash, to rent out on Turo when you're in the field or deployed, and all those other such things, then depreciation can become you know, a bit of a friend for you because you can take deductions off the value loss. But most people don't do that. Most people just buy a car to drive for themselves. And in that case, depreciation is just losing value. Now, what we did is we just took some data just to give you like an overall feeling of what we're talking about. And we looked at economy car purchases, so something that's like less than $30,000, like an affordable, accessible vehicle like a Kia. We've got mid-range cars, so that might be something like a Honda CR-V, or so like it could be like a small SUV like that. Or you could be talking about any number of sedans from Ford Focus or Toyotas or whatever. And then we looked at truck SUVs. And like obviously truck SUVs, probably the most popular category, especially for military. And they're going to be more expensive, right? But when you look at those three, the moment you drive that new vehicle off the lot, it's going to lose about 10% of its value. And in the first year, it's going to lose 20 to 22% of its value. Trucks are a little bit lower, only 19% value loss in that first year. And they're each year, they're like, they hold their value a little bit better than cars do, just because they're desirable. They're built to be a little bit more rugged and enduring. So they hold on just a little bit better in terms of their depreciation and value. But, you know, just for like a mid-range car, so maybe like a Dodge Charger or something like that, this is by year, how much percent of the value of that car disappears in thin air, just because you've been driving it and using it. The first year is 22%, the second year is 17%, the next year 14%, the fourth year is 12%, fifth year is 10%. And what this ends up doing is that, you know, even down in the 10th year that you own a vehicle, you're looking at 5 or 6% value loss. Now, if you actually run the numbers on this, what that means is if you have a 60-month or 5-year loan on a new car, by the time you have paid off that loan after 5 years, your car is going to lose about 60% of its value. And what happens? Well, if we just take a $30,000 car that you really wanted, maybe, you know, a real nice newer, brand new like Kia, whatever, $30,000, and you save up enough for like a 10% down payment, so you got to finance $27,000. And when you look at the financing costs and the interest that you'll pay over 5 years, you're going to end up paying like about, you know, $33,000 or $34,000 over 5 years for that car. And if you want to sell it, best case scenario is that you're going to get about $12,000 or $13,000 for it. So over 5 years, not including insurance, which we could say $2,000 a year for insurance, okay, $10,000 on top of it. Now you've got a $43,000 cost for that vehicle. And now let's consider, you know, new tires each year. So now we're up to $46,000. Let's consider the average cost of driving between gas and oil change and standard maintenance comes out to, at a very low end, $200 a month or $2,400 a year. You know, we're looking at something that over 5 years cost you well over $50,000, and you can resell it for $12,000. Well, if I came along and I bought that car from you after 5 years, we'll say for $12,000, the older cars get, the less they depreciate, right? So over the 5 years I own it, I'm only going to deal with 9%, 8%, 7%, 6%, and 6% depreciation, which means I'm still going to retain about 60 to 65% of the value, if not a little bit more, of that car, which means that if I bought it from you cash for $12,000, after 5 years, I can probably sell it for like $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000. So just right there, the way that depreciation really crushes you when you buy a new car is it's front-loaded and it's big numbers, and you're taking, you know, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 hit loss of value just because you bought that new car. If you buy used, the hit is much less, and that the way that works out is, you know, now I'm only losing a few hundred dollars in value a year for driving that car, whereas you were losing a few thousand. So depreciation is the number one way that you're going to lose money from buying a new car. The second is the cost of financing. And there was a time, and sometimes there still are times, right, when dealerships will sell a new car and they'll offer promotional like 0.9 or 1.9% APR. APR is annual percentage rate, which is like basically the interest you pay on the loan. So you can treat it the same. And really, if it's below, you know, if it's a 0% APR, like, okay, fine. Like probably smart to finance it. Okay. But what we're talking about is a rare case and requires really exceptional credit to get there anyway. In fact, I've got in front of me the statistics from 2024 and the current APRs or interest rates charged on auto loans. Now, if you have exceptional credit, which means you have a credit score above 800, a new car loan on average in the U.S. right now has about a 3.5% interest rate. And a used car loan has about a 5% interest rate. And that checks out, right? Like I went and got like a provisional, quote, and that checked out. Like that's what I was able to get. And that seems about right just based on what the federal funds rate is right now and prime rate and, you know, all that stuff that like it's bigger system up behind us that like dictates what interest rates we're going to be able to get. But how many folks who are just starting out, and especially in the military, if you've just graduated high school and you've enlisted, or maybe you've been working for a couple years in the military and living in the barracks and don't have any other sorts of credit. So your credit score is not yet exceptional. You know, it might just be good or very good. Well, right now, somebody with a good credit score, that's 670 to 740. Which is pretty good if you're just starting out. You know, a lot of people, it takes time to get there and they have to be really responsible. And at that point, your interest rate's almost double. You know, a new car loan for somebody at that point, they're looking at 6.5% to 7%. And used car rates right now for somebody with good credit are 10% to 10.5%. Now, if you have poor credit, there's absolutely no excuse in the world to finance anything. And that's because you're going to pay through the nose. So I'm gonna share with these rates, but we're not gonna use it as an example. All right, if you have poor credit, which is below 580, which means only in rare circumstances could you qualify even to get a VA loan, or you know maybe an FHA or USDA loan, which are special loans for houses, because you got to have at least a 580 to be minimally qualified to borrow. But if you have even worse credit, so not even good enough credit to buy a house, you can still get a car loan. For people with poor credit, buying a new car, they would be qualified at 14 to 20%. And if it's a used car, someone with poor credit, that's 20 to 26% APR. And I can also attest to that because back in the day, many of the young Marines who went out and bought used cars and who had to have Mr. Corey go back with them to help them return it, when we asked them, the interest rates that they reported getting were 19, 20, 24, and 27%. Okay, so it's real. And when you have interest rates like this, your payments are going to be anywhere from 150 to 200% higher because of all the interest you have to pay. But let's go back and let's just say that you have good to very good credit, which means you're in the 670 to 800 range. Now, that might apply to somebody who's, you know, like an E4, E5, they're in their mid-20s. When they joined the military, they got a starter credit card through Navy Federal or USAA, and then maybe since they've added to it and added like a Chase card or a Venture card or something like that, Capital One Venture card, or maybe somebody who is a commissioned officer and, you know, they've been paying off their career starter loan or they've been paying off their student loans, and paying off those loans builds your credit and helps you out. So now you're getting down in the ballpark where financing that car is going to be interest rate of anywhere from, on the low end, somewhere like 4.5%, all the way up to, could be 10.5% or so. And what we did is we just looked at something right in the middle. We said, well, what if you, you know, what if you get an 8.9%, right? Like that's sort of right in the middle. That's between 8 and 10 and between 7 and 12, right? So a 9% interest rate on a 5-year car loan, you're going to end up paying 25% more than the actual loan in terms of interest. What I mean, here's an example. If you go out and buy a used 2019 Toyota for $20,000, once you figure in the loan costs and the interest, you're going to pay about $25,000 over 5 years. And again, that car, when you want to come and sell it, it's going to only be resale value of like $10,000 to $12,000, a little bit better than half because you already bought used, but you financed it. And so you're going to be spending $25,000 for a car that's worth $10,000 to $12,000. So just as before, it's not as much. You know, in this case, going from $20,000, you overpaid $5,000 for the financing. So $5,000 in loan costs and interest. And you lost $8,000 in depreciation over 5 years. So depreciation is still the number one killer for avoiding a new car, avoiding financing, things like that. And the number two is the amount that you pay to borrow that money. At the end of it, if you've just been paying off, you know, your $400 a month, maybe $420 a month on that loan, you are going to have been in the position where you have zero cash and a $12,000 car. Well, let's just say you still really wanted that 2019 Toyota. You didn't want to go way back to 2012 to afford an $8,000 used Toyota. You still wanted the relatively nice one to feel somewhat good about yourself and feel like you're rewarding yourself for your hard work, and that's fine, right? But let's say you paid cash for it. So you saved up money from deployment, from a reenlistment bonus, from a career starter loan or some other incentive, and that allowed you to pay the $20,000 cash for the car. Tip, you might get like an extra $1,000 off if you pay cash. They tend to, dealers kind of like to have all their money at once. And you should, at the very least, you should negotiate and make an offer about 8 to 10% less, maybe more, depending on how aggressive you are, and see what you can get just for offering cash. But anyway, in this case, you pay cash, you got no monthly payment, which would have been about $420 on a 9% loan for 5 years. You can now save that $420. And at the end of 5 years, you will have the $25,000 cash sitting there, plus a $10,000 or $12,000 trade-in value. So you can literally level up in 5 years from that $20,000 car to a $35,000 car and not have any payments. It just takes a little patience, right? It just takes a little patience or some smart budgeting. If you're a car person and you're joining the military, then maybe the thing to do is to use your sign-on bonus, or a retention bonus if you reenlist, or a career starter loan, or any other incentive for critical skills, and just use some of that cash to buy the car cash. Because the third way that buying cars, new cars, and financing any car makes you poor is what you give up by making those payments. We call it, in economics, we call it opportunity cost. And it's just saying, what is the cost of the thing that I had an opportunity to get, but I didn't because I spent my money someplace else? And in this case, this first case with the 2019 Corolla, this person had a $420 a month payment by financing the car. They could have saved and invested $420. And if they had done that, they'd have at least $25,000 cash after 5 years. And that could be enough for a new car, or maybe they want to keep driving the Corolla and they're going to take that $25,000 and the VA loan and they're going to go become a homeowner and they're going to get it, a duplex, move someone in the other side. That person's going to pay enough to cover the mortgage. And now this person is house hacking, living rent free, driving loan free, and pocketing 100% of their paycheck, right? And not giving any of it away to the banks. So in summary, there's these three big ways, right? You lose thousands and thousands of dollars every year in depreciation on the vehicle, which means you're paying for more than you're getting. The second is you're paying a lot to finance. So you're overpaying for the car in the first place. If you actually look at those numbers and ask yourself, like, oh, okay, a $20,000 car, that seems like a good deal. But you're not paying the sticker price. You're paying the total loan cost. You're paying $25,000. It's no longer a good deal. You're getting ripped off. And then the third way that it costs you money is you're losing out on the wealth and income that you could have if you were able to save those payments. So the question of what should you do has a couple other temptations that you got to be aware of. And I'm going to take this example straight from our first book, Service and Wealth, which you can pick up on Amazon as a paperback or in a Kindle version. If anybody out there's got a great narrating voice, then send me an email and maybe I'll hire you to make it into an audiobook too. But what we did is we said, let's take a look at the three different ways you can own a car. Because someone still might say, hey, look, if I lease a car, yeah, I got the down payment. Yeah, I got the monthly payment. But you know what? I don't have to deal with the depreciation because at the end of the 3 years, I get to give this car back to the dealership and they eat the depreciation. You know, we said that you're looking at your biggest loss is from depreciation. Your second biggest loss is from the cost of financing. And then you also have that opportunity cost. So I just did a little comparison side by side. And I went on to Auto Trader and I found three different vehicles. I was looking at a used car for $8,000, a used Toyota Prius. And then I was looking at like a GMC Acadia lease. And then the 2019 Toyota. Right. So I looked at those three different, and if you buy used, right, you pay cash, you put $8,000 down. There's no monthly payment. And after 36 months, that means you put $0 out of pocket. And after 36 months, that Toyota is still going to be about $5,000 or $6,000. So that means that you're going to get back some of what you quote unquote invested. And your total cost for that 3 years in terms of the vehicle itself was about $2,000 or $3,000 because you're going to sell it or trade it in and get some money back. And you had no payments. Now, the person who financed, and I chose 36 months, right, because that's like a PCS cycle. So, you know, you come back to North Carolina or Texas or Florida or Nebraska or California or wherever, and you need a car because you were overseas and you're driving around for 3 years, and then all of a sudden, boom, you get orders to Germany, right? And you're like, well, I'm not taking this with. I'll just figure it out when I get there. I'll go to the used car lot over there, whatever. So I did 36 months as it making sense for a typical military vehicle ownership length. And plus, a lot of leases are 36 months, which is one of the reasons why they tend to bait military folks in and trap them into the deal. But before we get to the lease, let's go back again to the finance. You're talking about $400 to $420 a month on the loan for that 2019 Toyota. You put $2,000 down, and after 36 months, you will already have made $14,400 worth of payments. You haven't finished paying it off, but you've already spent $14,400 on top of the $2,000 down. And at this point, because you still owe money on the loan, you still owe about, you know, anywhere from $8,000 to $10,000 on the principal, when you go to sell it or trade it in, you're not going to get the actual book value, right? Even if it's through depreciation, even if it's still worth $14,000, if you still owe $10,000 on that loan, they're going to take the $10 to pay off the loan, and you're going to walk away with $4, right? So the argument that getting a nicer car will have a higher resale value only makes sense if you're actually, you know, paying cash and you're buying slightly used to avoid the major depreciation hits in years 1 through 4. But if you're financing it, you still got to pay that loan back. And so in this case, again, straight from the book and straight from Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book, on this 2019 Toyota that you're forced to sell after 3 years, you're only going to get about $4,000 back. And you had already put $2,000 down, and you'd already made $14,400 worth of payments over 3 years, which means your total cost was $12,400 over 3 years. It's not bad, right? It could be a lot worse, but it's still four times as much as the buying the used car cash. And then the third option, again, this is like the siren song that pulls so many military families in, is to lease, right? They're like, oh, it's convenient. I don't have to worry about it. Like, I'll turn it in. It's covered. Like, it's a new car. I don't have to deal with depreciation. I don't have to think about reselling it when I'm PCSing. And what's the cost of convenience? Well, I found a very cheap lease, a $445 a month lease with $2,000 down. And I had to do that because I wanted the down payment to be about the same as the finance car, just to show how much worse off you are with the lease. Okay. So in this case, the lease is slightly higher, 36 payments, $16,020 over 3 years. So there's your $18,000 and 20 bucks out of pocket. But because it's a lease, you get none of the retained resale or trade value. You just hand it back in. And so in this case, the lease is the most expensive by far. It's $18,020 over 3 years compared to a financed used car of $12,400, or just buying a used car cash, a humble used car cash, in which case you're looking at, you know, being only $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 out at the end of 3 years. What could you do with that money, right? What could you do with an extra $10,000 or $15,000 or more in your pocket every PCS cycle? That can be life-changing cash, right? Like in certain markets, you know, nationwide in the U.S. in 2023, the average starter home, you know, you see everybody talking about the average home in America costs over $400,000. Well, remember, that's taking into account like the $1.5 million, you know, townhomes being built in like Boulder, Colorado and Austin, Texas and Seattle, Washington, right? Or like the $2 million apartments in New York. If you just define it as a starter home, a three-bedroom, two-bath, about 1,500 square feet, 1,400 to 1,600 square feet, in America, in 2023, the average price is only $191,000 nationwide. You know, the closing costs on that, and closing costs are things you have to pay, like the lawyer who does the paperwork and the bank who, like, handles the money, and the insurance company that checks that insures the property, and the title insurance company that makes sure that there's nobody who's going to come and take your house from you because of something somebody before you did. You know, you're looking at 2 or 3%, so you're looking at about $5,000, maybe $6,000 closing costs on a house like that. And so, you know, the cost of car ownership, the cost of financing a car, is easily the cost of being a homeowner, using a zero down VA loan. And leasing a car is using a VA loan, but maybe putting 5% down. So when it comes down to it, and we're looking at cars, you know, you can go to just about any community services event, or like Command Financial Specialist, or other, you know, even like at the Transition Assistance Program or Transition Readiness Seminars across the service branches, you'll get plenty of classes on like how to finance a car, how to get it, take out your first car loan, right? The answer should be never. Like, you should just like stop listening if you have to go, and if you don't have to go, don't go, because these are just recipes for financial disaster and a road to ruin. And, you know, the last thing I'll say is we're finishing up another book here. I've got a lot of stuff going, right? but you can literally go through a 20-year career, and you can have a swing in your total net worth of about $396,000 if you choose one of two options, right? If you are constantly financing cars and out of pocket paying the banks and finance companies, that's, you're going to lose about $200,000 to $250,000 worth of value in cash over the course of a 20-year military career. If, on the other hand, you start small and humble, you pay cash, and every 4 or 5 years you upgrade to a new car. I should know where this is. Here it is. I went through the whole situation, in which you, at 20 years, so your last 5 years, right? This is like for someone who's going to promote to E8 and retire after 20. You know, they start out simple with a used Toyota. They upgrade to a used Tacoma. Then they eventually find themselves upgrading to a BMW X5, right? Like a $60,000 car that they have enough cash to pay for. And then as they get into their final years, right, they can finish their career. And maybe this doesn't appeal to you, right? But they buy a brand new, you know, 2038 Chevrolet Corvette LT2 for $100,000, right? Because they've been saving the cash and they can do it. And then they have the cash flow to refill that war chest or that charging fund. And after 20 years, they're going to have over $120,000 in cash. And they're going to be driving a Corvette, right? And because they didn't have those payments all those years. And so, and the net cost is, well over $270,000 would have been if you had financed all those cars for 20 years, $270,000 worth of car payments compared to having $123,000 of cash. And you're still driving the brand new Corvette on the day that you take the uniform off for the last time and retire. So it's a $400,000 swing in your net worth just from this decision. So we're going to cut it off there, right? Like, once again, we talked for like 45, 50 minutes, threw a lot of data out there, a lot of numbers. It's worth going back and listening to again and writing those down if you really want to prove it to yourself. Or you can pick up Service and Wealth, in which we touch on it a little bit. And then the best thing you can do is head on over to www.militarywealthcoach.com. If you, the first above the fold, right above the cut line, like that's signing up to be on the notification list for the mini course when it drops in a few weeks here. If you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see, you know, join now. And that's where you can opt in to our email list. And if you opt in the email list, then you will be the first to know when new products come out. So you will definitely know about the mini course. You won't be on the mini course pre-sale, which gets it all for free. Like, you'll just find out like, hey, this is available. And so we'll probably, you know, sell it for a few bucks, but you'll also get notified when new books come out. So, at this point we've got two that are neck and neck across the finish line. One is the Ultimate Military Retirement Plan, which teaches you how to plan out not just military retirement, regular retirement, and even early retirement so that you could, in theory, leave the military after 20 years and never work again. And then the other one that we're going to try to push across the line is called War Chest, and that is all about how to use cash savings and a charging fund or a war chest and do exactly this kind of waterfall with your cars over the course of your lifetime to pay cash, upgrade every 4 to 5 years so you can constantly be driving a car that makes you happy and rewards you, but avoid the debt trap and avoid financing. And at the end of the day, come out $400,000 richer in 20 years. And so if you sign up to our email list, then you will be notified when those come out. And as we did with Service and Wealth, there'll be a short period when those new books on Amazon are free for download. And so, you know, it doesn't cost much to go over there to the website, sign up, put your email on the list. You'll get a weekly newsletter. We're not soliciting anything other than that. You'll just get a weekly newsletter with updates on blogs, podcasts, and other products. And then you'll get the opportunity to get the first look on things for free. So hopefully that's a good value proposition for you. And with that, we're going to move on. It's almost time for school pickup for the kiddo. So I want to thank you for listening again. And until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.